The name of this week's parsha is quite eerie for us this year. Achrei Mos, after the death. And it speaks about Yom Kippur. And specifically, there's a big emphasis on the Kohen Gadol, who's the main actor of Yom Kippur. And in the second reading today, we're going to take a look at Yom Kippur scapegoating, the big kahuna representation, what the Kohen Gadol did. And then we're going to talk about how tshuva can and should be a transformative experience. So, as the Parsha of Achrei Mos continues into Sheni, when we reach verse 21 in chapter 16, the Torah says about the scapegoat. This is, so there was two goats that were brought in front of the Beis HaMikdash, two identical goats, and there was lots drawn. And one goat would end up being a korban, a special korban. His blood would be brought inside the Holy of Holies, it's a rarity, once a year, a proverbial cliff. And this is the original scapegoat. So this scapegoat, this goat who was going to carry the blame and the burden of all the sins of Israel, the Torah tells us, V'somach aharein eshtei yodov, Aaron has to lean heavily, his full weight, with both hands, al reish hasoir, on the head of this goat. In other words, in order for this goat to be the scapegoat, in order for him to carry the sins of the Jewish people, Aaron, who is the Kohen Gadol, or the future Aaron, whoever represents the Jewish people in the future, as the big kahuna, as the Kohen Gadol, has to forcefully lean on the head of this goat. Now this is a live goat. It's al reish hasoyer hachai. It's on the head of the live goat. V'hisvada olav. Eskol ha'avenes. He has to then verbalize and confess all of the sins. He's got to confess the sins of the Jewish people leaning on the head of this goat, as if transferring the sins onto the goat. There's kol pishem, all their inequities. The kol chateisam, for all the sins. The nosan oisam, he places these sins al roish hasoyer, on the head of the goat. Veshilach biyad ish iti hamidbara. And then this goat will be sent in the hands of a designated individual into the desert. Okay, so Rashi comments on the business of ish iti, the designated person, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, I want to talk about the idea of on the head of the goat. V'nosan oisam al roish hasoyer. Put us on the head. It's not just the goat. There's an emphasis on the head of the goat. So the Ibn Ezra says something very interesting. He says that sins aren't nitfasim biyad. Can't put it in the hands. He says, instead, it has to be, so to speak, on the head. Ever hear people use the expression, blame it on me, put it on my head? Let's say put it in my hands, put it on my head. Because when it comes to transferring sin or blaming somebody for sin, we say put it on your head. So this is the idea of the goat, that it goes, so to speak, onto his head. And here's what we're being told, inasmuch as this is something which we don't really understand. It doesn't exactly make sense to us. We sin and a goat suffers. Like, what does that mean? We don't understand it. This is like a chok, this is like a statute to the Torah. It's not something that fits into our rhyme and reason at all. But the Ibn Ezra says there's a haftacha, there's a guarantee, a promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that if we will do as per the Torah's instructions, so then the sins will be removed from our nation and they will be placed on the head of the goat, proverbially, but also quite literally. Aaron leans his hands on the head of the goat and he confesses the sins. And then, once the sins are placed on the head of the goat, then it goes off to a place where they won't be mentioned anymore. And he goes off to the wilderness, it goes off to a place where nothing grows, and there the sins will, so to speak, be gotten rid of. The Sif Sikoyanim, he kind of explains this in a very interesting way. He says, the Mishnah tells us that somebody who does even a single Aveda is konale kateger echad. The Mishnah tells us that he acquires for himself, maybe not wanting to, but this is what happens invariably. Once you do a sin, you acquire a prosecuting angel, a negative force. So he says, now we have all these negative forces that were created through inappropriate activities of the Jewish people. We're stuck because of who we are. By having a special neshama, when we do things inappropriately, we create a negative energy force. And the Kohen, he says, ultimately channels all of this. And all these kategorim are then overwhelmingly placed on the head of the goat. And because the goat has all this negative energy, the goat would become ill. and the goat, because of the weight of the sins, would not be able to budge. And at that point, the person who was designated would have to carry the goat. So the goat would get physically sick because of the amount of negative energy that it had to internalize. And this is quite literal. Aaron would literally channel the negative energy because he was the Kohen Gadol, because he represented all the Jewish people, the negativity that was engendered through sin, somehow Aaron could relate to. And he was actually able to channel it. And with his hands, he would channel it onto the head of this goat. He would verbalize and speak about the concept of sin and ask Hashem for forgiveness. And by doing this and placing his hands forcefully on the head of the goat, he would literally channel negative energy onto this animal, and the animal would get so sick, it wouldn't be able to move anymore. And so, it was given then, v'shilach biad ish iti amidbar. Then it would be sent by virtue of this designated person. So who is an ish iti? Nowhere else in the Torah do we have this exact expression, an ish iti. Rashi says that the word iti comes from the terminology of eight. Eight ayin tuf. Ayin tuf, eight means a time. You know, eight lasot, time to do, eight. So ish iti means literally hamuchan, the person who is designated lakach for this, miyom etmo, from the day before. So this person had to be chosen, selected, and designated. And if you will, we could say, from Rashi's perspective, he would be the man of the hour. It's like a proverbial expression when somebody's the man of the hour, the person who was there right at that moment, or the person of the moment. So he was the person of the moment. The spotlight was on this person at that point. He was performing the major activity that would bring about atonement and blessing for the Jewish people. The Kohen Gadol would channel the energy. The goat is stuck with it. The Shachal HaTorah says it got physically sick, and the Ish Iti steps in then to his role, and he brings this goat off into Eretz Gzeirah. Now Rashbam, he maintains that the terminology of Ish Iti is not because he's chosen for a specific hour or a specific moment, but rather this was a person who he knew his way around. And therefore, he was the person that in all times, when you needed, you know, certain places in a time of need, this is the person that's there. Ish iti means he's the person in the right hour. Not of the hour, but the person of the right hour. He knew his way around. And you're navigating the desert, and you're holding this sick goat, and it's not simple. There's no option for failure here. This person has much too much riding on his shoulders and the goat that he's carrying. So you need to make sure that this person of the hour is not somebody who is designated just for an hour, but actually the person of the ages, not a person of the age, a person of the ages, the person who's going to be needed when the hour comes. This is the hour of need of the Jewish people. This is the most powerful hour of the year. From this hour comes atonement. From this hour, the Jewish people are cleansed of their sin and able to receive Hashem's bracha, blessing for a new year. He is that person. The Ibn Ezra says that Ish Iti comes from the terminology of eight, of the time, of the moment. And he says it's quite possible because this person would not only be selected for this hour, but this person was always chosen for this time. The Ibn Ezra suggested there was a person who did this annually. This was not a one-time event. In sharp contrast, the Chizkuni argues with Ibn Ezra. He says, absolutely not. You didn't get chosen for this twice. Do you know why? Because when you work in a radioactivity, a center of radioactivity, you get harmed too. And the Chizkuni says something shocking. He says that Ish Iti means a person whose hour had come. And he maintains, based on Midrashim, that by means of the different kechavim mazolos, by means of analyzing, they call it the zodiac or astrology, it could be determined when somebody's year had come, and people could actually know if this was the last year of their life, and it was a person whose last year of his life, so we said, he's not going to live out the year anyway, let him be the one. So you took a person who was anyway destined to return his soul to his maker this year, and that person would hold his goat, and he would absorb an enormous amount of negativity by default, just by holding this goat. And as such, he would not be able to live out the year regardless. And they don't want to do this to a regular person. So therefore, it was Ish Iti, was the person of the hour, the person whose hour had come. So clearly, this is a very serious business. Not something light, and it made a huge difference. We may not understand it, but this is what happened in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Kohen Gadol is the one who channeled all this negative energy, and he was able to channel it precisely because the Kohen Gadol is the one who represents the entirety of the nation of Israel. Verse 22 explains to us and shows us now how this person of the hour, this designated individual, had such an important job. V'noso ha-soyer olav es kol aveinosav. The soyer, this he-goat, would then carry all the sins. Where would he bring them to? El Eretz Gezeira, into a land that is barren and empty. V'shilach es ha-soyer. He would then send the he-goat Bamidbar off into the desert. So what does this mean, that he would send him, so to speak, El Eretz Gezeira, first of all? What does it mean he would carry him El Eretz Gezeira? And it says, V'noso ha-soyer olav. He would carry the he-goat on him. Reb Sadia Goen says, that's right, he would carry the he-goat. The he-goat got sick. He couldn't move anymore. At a certain point, the he-goat started to stumble and choke and collapse. And at that point, the ish-iti stepped in. He knew exactly what he had to do. And he would literally, Nasa Allah means on him, means on the person, the designated individual. He would literally carry this goat. In the Shem Olam, it says, this is not a commandment. This is rather matter of fact. It's just telling you how it's going to work. This goat's not going to be able to budge. At a certain point, the goat will have so much negative energy that it will have to be carried. So whether it was instantaneous or it took a little time, at a certain point, the Ish-iti was going to carry this goat. And he did.
Is this person also fasting as well?
Is this person fasting? Excellent question. The answer is yes, but there was small kind of these little huts set up all along the way. And they would offer the person food or drink. Wow. And if he had to have food or drink, he was permitted to eat and drink so that he would have the strength to carry out his mission. This is a mission of supreme importance. So yes, he would fast as long as he could still pull this off. And it seems that this was not a simple task. And even the emotional stress and the exhaustion was not next door. That's the letters to go all the way outside of Yerushalayim to a place where nothing grows, to a place which is barren, a wilderness, and find that cliff and then send the scapegoat over the cliff. So it seems that there was people who actually had to eat or drink along the way. And then these little huts, that's how they would communicate. Because one hut would tell the next hut, and the next hut would tell the next hut, and that's how the messenger would get back to the Beis HaMikdash, that the he-goat has gone over the cliff, and as such, the services in the Beis HaMikdash were able to continue. So it actually worked that way. There was this continued...
Just one person
who's carrying? One person. Ish-iti. Torah is very specific. One person. If you had many people, it wouldn't be so difficult. But you're handling extreme radioactivity. This is about as serious as it gets.
Does this person become tameh from carrying the heat?
It doesn't say he becomes tameh, but like we said, the Chizkuni says this person would not last a year.
Would not last a year.
He would himself would get sick and die at some point during the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yes. Who's going to volunteer for it? So he came a drop late. So we said it also. The Chizkuni says that they would actually choose somebody who they knew was going to pass away that year. So that's the mean Ish-iti, the person of the hour, the person whose hour had come.
And that person had enough strength to do it?
Ah, very good question. So that's what they say. They didn't find a guy who was in the terminal ward and say, you know what, you're sick anyway, you do it. Because he wouldn't have koyach. They found somebody who maybe was healthy, but they knew by means of looking at the kechav me-mazolus, they were able to predict that this would be his year. Nobody knows when he's going to die. It says, "Ein adam yidei itav uragav." Nobody knows his moment. Nobody knows his minutes. It says, "Nobody knows his minutes." It doesn't say, "Ein adam yidei shnasei." Person could know his year. Person could know this is the year. May not know exactly when. A year is not a day. It's not an hour. But this is about as intense as it could get. This is really, really serious stuff. And the place where the goat would be pushed down was a place where no blessing would reside. It was a place of extraordinary negativity. In fact, the Rashbam says that Eretz Gezeira means an Eretz Chareva, a destroyed portion of land. He says nothing would ever grow in this place. It was Gezura in Nichrasa. It was cut off from anything live. No positive activity would ever unfold in this place because of all this intense negative energy that the goat would contain and ultimately it would plots over there. I don't know where it is today. I don't think anybody could tell you exactly where it is today. I would be fairly certain that this place is not exactly booming in real estate market. V'shilach es hasarid hamidbara. He sent off into the desert. So the Gemara in Yuma says, Shelchen oisir lemisa. He sent off to his death, says the Gemara in Daf Samach Zayin. And that means that he would be sent, means he would be pushed. It would push him over the hill, so to speak, and then he would go over the cliff, and the animal, as it would make this descent, it would accelerate, and the animal would literally fall apart because of the fall. The fall would kill the animal. And that was the end of the animal. And as much as we don't understand this, this is what Hashem tells us had to be done annually on Yom Kippur. And then the Torah says, after all this, in verse 23, Uva Aharon Eloi Hol Moed, then Aharon, which is really the nom de guer for all the future Kohanim Gedolim, because Aharon never did this per se. There was no Eretz Gezeira, there was no cliff that they knew of in the desert. Although there had to be somewhere, they had to scout out the area for the 40 years. It had to be Aharon. There had to be some cliff at some point that they used in the desert. So Aharon would come, Ufashat as Big de Havad. Then he would remove the special linen clothing. Asher lavash bavaye al hakodesh, that he wore when he would enter into the inner sanctum, the hinicham sham, and he'd leave them there. So I want to skip forward a couple of Rashi's. I want to come to the end of Rashi's commentary on verse 23, the hinicham sham. So where is sham? So Rashi tells us not in the ohel moed, but rather in the place that he would disrobe. So the kohen gadol had to immerse in a mikvah 5 times. The first time where it would initiate his day was outside of the Beis HaMikdash. However, afterwards, once the Kohen Gadol is in the middle of doing what he has to do, he would not leave the Beis HaMikdash precincts. So there was a particular area, one of the chambers, that was along the south wall of the Beis HaMikdash, and this chamber was called Beis HaParva. There's different opinions why it was called that. It seems it was named after a person who kind of built, designed, and developed that area. And the Beis HaParva was really where the hides of the animal for certain offerings would be kind of worked over, and then the Kohanim would receive these hides. So on the top, on the roof of the Beis HaParva, there was a mikveh. A mikveh that, to the best of our knowledge, was used only once a year. It was not a filtered mikveh, it was not a heated mikveh. It was a very cold mikveh. They gathered the rainwater naturally, and this freezing cold mikveh, the Kohen Gadol had to immerse in 4 times during the course of Yom Kippur. And it got very cold. And the Kohen Gadol was not always 35 years old. And sometimes the fasting and all of the stress and the pressure and the physical activity was very strenuous. And so we developed wet methodologies in which we were able to make the water a little warmer. Yeah. One of the ideas is that Ein Shavus Ben Migdash, and the Beis HaMikdash itself, mm-hmm. the limitations that our sages placed with regard to the observance of Shabbat does not apply in the Beis HaMikdash. So one of the ideas of a Shavus was to put hot iron. It would have these irons that would heat it up in the hearth, and they would take a hot iron rods and they would put it into the water. And invariably, it would sizzle as soon as it went in. You're not allowed to do this on Shabbat outside the Beis HaMikdash, but in the Beis HaMikdash it was allowed, and that would at least take the bite out of the cold water. It wasn't as cold when the Kohen Gadol would immerse over there. So there, the Kohen Gadol, they would put up a sheet. The Kohen Gadol would disrobe from the white clothing that was specially sewn for Yom Kippur, and then he would put on the special gold clothing. But the gold clothing was not unique to a Kohen Gadol. Perhaps it was tailored to fit the Kohen Gadol, but wasn't made on an annual basis. And the golden clothing, we would assume, was actually inherited from Kohen Gadol to Kohen Gadol. They didn't make a new breastplate every year. They didn't make this clothing, which literally had 24 karat gold, you know, kind of running through it, strands of gold. So the Kohen Gadol would disrobe there, and he would leave the clothes right there, next to the mikveh. Melamed, this teaches us, Shetu'unim Gniza. Nobody comes and collects these clothing after and puts them away in a special chamber, saving them for next year. Nothing doing. Lo yishtamesh ba'oysan dalad begadim liyem kippurim achar. This was the end of the Kohen Gadol special Yom Kippur service. Now the Kohen Gadol changes back after going to the mikveh into regular clothing, the regular 8 vestments, which are called Bigdei Hazav, and the Kohen Gadol goes back to the rest of the Avodah, the rest of the service in the Beis HaMikdash, which is part of what's done in the Beis HaMikdash on a Yom Tov, on a special day, but not on Yom Kippur. Only for the special Avodah, for the special services of Yom Kippur, would the Kohen wear these unique and resplendent white linen clothing. When the Kohen Gadol would lean on the goat, that was special Yom Kippur activity. So the Kohen Gadol wore the special white clothing. And now, this is how the Kohen Gadol's Avodah concludes the special avodah, special service of Yom Kippur. And so since it concludes at this point, Kohen Gadol disrobes, v'nicham sham, the Torah says. It's very unusual. It doesn't tell us usually what happens to the clothes. V'nicham sham. And Rashi says, why is the Torah telling us you place it there? And he says, that's to tell you that these clothes will not be put away for next year. They will not go into a special wardrobe closet. They will not be reused. Nicham sham. The Kohen Gadol just drops the clothes and they're never used again. Tu'unim gniza. You don't throw them in the garbage. They're sacred, holy clothing. It's like a clothing, like the garment you use to make the wrap around the Sefer Torah. It's the Kohen Gadol's clothing for the holiest day of the year. They go into gniza. They go into some place where they're placed, put away for posterity, never looked at, never touched, never used again. So the obvious question is, why is that so important? Why did the Torah tell us what to do with those clothes? What if those clothes were clean? We know that they were very expensive clothes. They were very, very finely tailored, made of the finest linen, and it was a big deal. It's like a wedding gown. So why wouldn't we use it? You know, today, wealthy brides make their own wedding gowns, and then they'll donate them to what we call a gemach. And brides who can't afford to have a few $1,000 wedding gown for that special night of their life, what day of their life, they'll borrow it. And the tailors will change it, make it bigger, smaller, make it work. Why bother doing this? It seems like such a waste of money. You spend all this money, you make the Kohen Gadol, do we really expect him to gain or lose that much weight in 1 year? He won't be able to fit into his clothes, couldn't tailor it. If it's dirty, launder it. What's the point? So we have a very interesting lesson from the Rebbe here, which will take us from the Yom Kippur scapegoating, which is brought about through big kahuna representation, and will teach us a very important lesson about these clothes and how they can and should inspire us in our time. On page Reish Mem Ches, Simen Yud Dalet, the Rebbe asks exactly this question. Madua dafka biyachas lebigdi halovin shel yom kippurim. Why is it that only with regard to the special Yom Kippur white vestments of the Yom Kippur, kayemes hakpoda, there's this emphasis in the Torah shahashimosh bahem, that the use should be chad pa'ami bilvad, that the use should be once. It's like literally disposable clothes. You wear them once and you get rid of them. Now we know in the Beis HaMikdash that we didn't, so to speak, we didn't count our pennies. Beis HaMikdash, the spending was free. It was luxurious kind of spending. So if there was a need for us to launder clothes, they didn't launder the clothes. Took them and that's it. You sent them off, turned them into something else. They recycled. They took the clothing and from this they made wicks for the menorah. Later, some of these clothes were used to make the torches of a celebration on Sukkot, Simchat Beit HaShoeva. But here it doesn't say anything like that. You don't make wicks out of them. It should be a nice idea. We don't use them for torches, for celebrations. It just says that's it. Use them once. Doesn't say if it got dirty, doesn't say if it got soiled, doesn't say if it got torn. You use them once and you get rid of them. You never use them again. And we don't find anything else like that. There's nowhere else in the Beis HaMikdash activities where there's this emphasis on chad pa'mi, on disposable use. Once and never again.
Such an extraordinary day. Why is that so unusual? Right? You don't go to the Kodesh HaKodeshim any other time of the year. You go to Yom Kippur. So why
in
keeping with the theme of the day?
Why would that be in keeping with the theme? The theme of the day is wasting?
Not just wasting, but it's such.
Why wouldn't you? Such Kedusha.
Beyond any other day of the year.
Yeah, agreed. So if it's such Kedusha beyond any other day of the year, why wouldn't you want to use it every year? Imagine the accumulative holiness. These are the Kohen Gadol's clothes that he wore year after year after year in the Beit HaMikdash.
No, it's not just that, you know. Like this, there is something unique about
Yom something Kippur. Very unique. You wear a kittel on Yom Kippur?
Yeah, I don't.
You don't? Okay, next year you will. So it's very holy. It's very special once a year.
With all due respect, Rabbi, you're not the Kohen Gadol.
No, I'm not the Kohen Gadol, and neither are you. But I actually wear my father's kittel because he wears his father's kittel, and to me that's special. On the contrary, I don't throw it out. It's like a little already old and it's already a little torn, but you know, to me it's special.
But that too, you went into the Kodesh HaKodeshim.
I understand. So if you went into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, use it again.
Only once a year.
Understood. So once a year, you take this special clothing, you put it away in a closet, and it's Yom Kippur clothes. Why never use it again? And we don't find this with regard to anything else. So the Rebbe suggests that the explanation, at least in an ethical or inspirational way, is as follows. Matarasa ha'ikris shal avodas kohen gadol b'yom ha'kippur, in the primary focus and purpose of the kohen gadol's avodah on Yom Kippur, is kedei lahavi es bnei Yisrael lidei tshuva shlema, to bring the Jewish people to tshuva. This is not about sit back, relax, and enjoy. Oh, great, the goat went over the cliff. Let's go back to McDonald's. Let's have fun again. I mean, after all, the goat died for us, and the kohen gadol did a lot of hard work for us. He did all the heavy lifting. He toiled. He sweated. He went and jumped in his freezing cold mikveh 5 times, and now we're freed of sin. Great. Let's start all over again and see if we can outpace last year's accumulation of sin. Right? Wrong. The idea of tshuva is supposed to be that we regret our misdeeds, our mistakes from the past, and we promise Hashem, okay, no more. I'm not going to play this game anymore. And maybe we don't play this game anymore. Maybe now we go to the next playing field, and next playing field there's new minds, new challenges, and maybe we're going to make mistakes again, but hopefully not the same mistakes all over again. Like, what would be the point of just making the same mistakes year after year? Hopefully you should make better mistakes, higher mistakes, loftier mistakes. You're held accountable for things that you weren't held accountable for in the past because you became elevated. So people will always make mistakes, but people should never make the same mistakes. The stakes get higher and higher. And as the stakes get higher, we have to up our game. We have to be more careful. We have to be more scrupulous and more effective. Now, really and truly, if a Jew doesn't do tshuva on Yom Kippur, according to at least one major opinion in the Talmud, nothing happens. In order for the wondrous cleansing of Yom Kippur to take place, you have to participate in Yom Kippur, which means that Yom Kippur works magically, mystically, if you're shav, if you return to Hashem. Not if you make a joke out of Yom Kippur. If a person doesn't come to shul and eats not kosher food and does all the things you shouldn't do on Yom Kippur, don't expect Yom Kippur to cleanse you. But when you come on Yom Kippur and you take a look at your past year and you say, you know what, this was really silly. What's life really about? What's the point of our existence? And you promise Hashem that it's going to be a better year. And you're going to do things more in a more focused way, in a more sincere way. So it makes a difference. And our efforts to try to come closer to Hashem are met with God's acceptance. We reach out and God reconciliates with us. Why? The reconciliation is a result of our rehabilitation, our tshuva. So really it's bezuchut ha-tshuva, it's in the merit of the tshuva that we are zochim, that we merit the kapara for the sins. It doesn't mean the tshuva is what takes away the sin. Yom Kippur takes away the sin, as long as you open the door to Yom Kippur. What makes Yom Kippur work? How do you download the energy of Yom Kippur? The answer is you need Yom Kippur software. That's the only way. So let's talk about tshuva. The Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, in the second chapter, in the fourth halacha, and this is a quote, Midarkei ha-tshuva li-yos ha-shav, it is the ways of tshuva, that the object, the subject, pardon me, of the tshuva, the person who's doing this tshuva, misrachek harbe min hadover shechotabai, he distances himself from sin. He no longer dances with the devil on the edge. You don't walk the tightrope anymore. And so much so, the Rambam says, that the real Baal Tshuva, he is Mishan Nishmo, he changes his name. And he says, Ani Acher. I'm not the person who did that. Stop accusing me of that. Please don't call me that. Eini Otoha Ish. I'm not the person Sha'asa Oton Hamasim. I'm not the person who did those things. So imagine a person would do a very heinous, terrible crime. And he was known in a certain way. He had a certain nam de gur, a certain nickname. And then he changes his ways. He doesn't want to be called it anymore. Don't call me that name anymore. I changed my ways. And in other words, tshuva is something that changes the person. It's mishane kolul esmahuto. It changes his very existence. It changes his definition. It changes his behavior. So much so that he becomes like a new person, a new personality. That's what we call tshuva, turning a new leaf, a transformation. Tshuva is really about transformation. Okay, now the Kohen Gadol, he's just like everybody else. I mean, he's a human being, but he's a little more so. He's more responsible. That's one person who carries the weight of the nation on his shoulders, quite literally. So if the idea of tshuva is supposed to affect transformation, you're not the same person. The same person who sits down in the pew on the evening of Yom Kippur shouldn't be the same person who leaves the shul on the night of Yom Kippur. We should be changed. Yom Kippur should change us. We should be different kind of people. If we could say that about everybody, the Jew who walked into the Beis HaMikdash on Leil Yom Kippur should not be the same Jew who exits the Beis HaMikdash on Matzah Yom Kippur. Well, if that's the case, imagine what should be the case for the Kohen Gadol. Imagine the big kahuna man, the one who's representing the whole nation, the one who has the primary responsibility of everything Yom Kippur represents, and it's all vested in his hands. So for sure, that should make a change. If every single Jew is supposed to be brought to tshuva through the Kohen Gadol, through his Aveda, would it not be self-understood that the Kohen Gadol becomes a different person? It would have to be. How not? And this, my dear friends, is the point. The clothing have to be made specifically for this Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol for whom those clothes was made no longer exists. He's a new person. And the Torah wants to illustrate that in the most graphic way. And therefore, the Torah illustrates to us what teshuva is supposed to mean. Special clothes are tailored and sewn for this Kohen Gadol. But we're 100% certain, when Yom Kippur draws to a close, he's not going to be the same person anymore. And as such, since the clothing require special tailoring, not alteration, but made specifically for this person, the Kohen Gadol who leads the Jewish people through a Yom Kippur will have to be a changed person. And as such, those clothing can't be kosher.
So does that mean he does teshuva as well?
I should hope so. The Kohen Gadol does tshuva on steroids. He big time does tshuva. I mean, not on steroids because that's artificial. It's real. But the Kohen Gadol does big time tshuva. And as so, it's a transformative experience. And very interestingly, we know from the Mishnah and from the Medrash that the Kohen Gadol would look differently. When he came out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he physically looked different. He radiated a holiness. We have a whole prayer in our Yom Kippur liturgy that says, it's called Mara Kohen, what the Kohen Gadol looked like because of his experience. He was a changed person. And that change is even reflected in the wardrobe and the tailoring. And with this, we shall conclude for today.